Hi, everybody.
Hey, Rob.
Hey.
Preacher brother. You're thinking...
Amen.
I know what you're thinking.
What are we thinking? You tell us.
What am I doing up here?
That's not what we're thinking.
I'm thinking the same thing. Sorry.
One of our greatest mistakes is assuming what other people are thinking, Rob.
Well, I am thinking, what am I doing up here? But I'm here. So nevertheless, here we go. I could actually start by saying ciao. Ciao. Sono Roberto.
Ah.
Anybody know Italian?
Yeah.
Poco, a little bit. Do you know what that means?
Your name is.
Yes. Ciao. Roberto. Hello. My name's Roberto. Robert.
Un gusto.
Come va? How are you?
Namaste.
How are you? And you say
bene.
Molto bene, grazie. Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. And picare, nice to meet you. I'll go now. I'm being a bit funny, but
mangiamo.
Mangiamo.
Let's eat.
Yeah, why not? Cibo food, why not? Yeah, I'm actually going to Italy in a few weeks. That's why I mentioned that. And one of my daughters is just decided to take me, which is kind of really nice. And there's a bit of a story behind that. She's a successful photographer, and as a 14-year-old said, "Look, Dad, where would you like to go one day when you're old?" And now I'm old, clearly. And I don't know, Italy would be nice. Not that I have any connection with Italy, but I thought, why not? Anyway, it stuck in her mind as a 14-year-old, and now she's 23. And about 4 months ago, she said, "Dad, I've got some news. Can I see you?" I'm going, "Sure." "What do you mean?" "No, I've got to see you. It's really important." And she's dating in a long-term relationship with her partner Nick, and I'm going, "What is this like? Don't worry, we're not getting married. There's no babies." Like, well, getting married is fine and having babies is fine, but anyway, she said, "We're going to go to Europe. Do you want to go to Italy?" And I'm going, "Really?" Anyway, cut long story short, we're going to Italy in a few weeks' time.
Awesome.
For 3 weeks.
Awesome.
So that's all quite funny. Focus on what I'm doing. We've been talking about the last few weeks in the middle of rain and lots of organic living, pictures of the kingdom and the different stories in Matthew 13. And last week was beautiful around the dough. And if you weren't here, if you didn't hear it, it was just magnificent. It was lovely. Simon actually got dough out here and he was mixing it and talking about the yeast in the dough and the metaphors of that and the metaphors that Jesus used there. And then the time that I remember before then was the mustard seed, faith mustard seeds that I was here for Mike when he spoke. And that was just really, really quite beautiful. And I'm going to be sharing another one, which is only one scripture, actually. It's a real short verse in Matthew again, 13:44. It's about treasure. So I'll read it out. It actually says, "The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in a field. In his excitement and his joy and his happiness, he hid it again, and then he sold everything he owned to get enough money to actually buy the field and to get the treasure too. The kingdom of heaven is like a treasure that a man discovered hidden in a field. In his excitement, he hid it again and sold everything that he owned to get enough money to buy the field and to get the treasure too." So I'm going to be talking today about treasures, some of the things that are important to me, and some of the things I feel that God's placed in my heart that hold weight, and ultimately really about Jesus, because he's treasure, he's our treasure, isn't he, and the things that he's doing in my life. But I want to start by actually asking you a question about me, because I look around here, I've been a part of Big Table for about a year, and I don't know everybody's names, and that's my problem, not your problem. I know most of the guys' names, that's good, and Tyler as well, because we spoke about you last week. Welcome back, Tyler. I spoke to your wife about you last week.
This is
and
nice
I spoke
man,
to you
right?
guys.
Tosh.
Kara. But I spoke to you guys before you went to the US a couple of months ago. I do remember that. So, But I want to which fact is untrue? There's three facts about me. Okay, see what you think. The three things are: I have 6 children. I have 111 years of parenting experience, and my son is John Robert Emmerich Tyler the 6th, which is not true. Do you think? Okay.
The last one.
John Robert Emmerich Tyler the 5th. Okay. Any other thoughts? I have 6 kids, 111 parenting years of parenting experience, or John Robert Emmerich Tyler the 6th. This is the book here. You guys are not going to say anything. This is a book that my dad got published a few years ago, and it's called My Dear Emma, edited by Robert Emmerich Tyler the 4th. That's my dad, so I'm the 5th, and my son Robbie is the 6th.
Get out of here.
So, papaw. I do have 6 kids, actually. We've got a photo of them coming up shortly, actually. And
is it that one?
And I've tricked you all because I actually do have 111 years parenting experience. Because if you add up Robbie, who's 28, and Laurie, who's Robbie's the one with the wetsuit in there, with the fluoro wetsuit now, when he was younger. Laurie with the birthday cake, she's 25, and she's actually the little one sitting on my knee, actually, back in Esperance. Albany. 25, if you add Abby, 23. If you add Cherry, 20. Then add Isaac and Ali. Is there one of all of us, the actual 6? No? Is there another one?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay. Oh, gosh, there was a wedding photo.
Oh, yeah.
A bigger one? A black one? No. Is there another one?
No.
Oh, okay. Well, there's the 6. And Isaac and Ali in the front. And so they're now, that was 7 years ago. So they're now 12 and 14. So there's lots of teenagers going on in the family.
So who's taking you to Italy?
Abby, which is far left. This is she was younger. Yeah, there we go. All right. So, good guessing, guys. Okay. All right. One of the other topics coming up soon, I think, is the fisherman's net. I love fishing, so I'm not sure if we've done that already or not, but that'll be fun, I'm sure. And the other kind of thought about going to Italy is that there's always an exchange rate. Well, there used to be. I mean, I think these days we just use cards when we're overseas. But I think when I think of the kingdom of God, like I've heard this say, like the exchange rate in God is actually really good. Like, you know, forget crypto, that's just funny. But actually, when we come to God and actually give him what we have, the money that we have, the talents that we have, the things that we have, the stuff that we get back is just way, way out, far greater than what we actually lay on the table there. So I want to be encouraging people about that. So really, I just want to be essentially coraggio. I want to actually just be encouraging today. And I don't think I probably need to share. We've had gifts and worship and some connection and communion at the end as well. But anyway, I'm here, so I better say something. So, treasures, the things that are important to me. I've always kind of thought that there's been 3 pillars in my life, and it might be similar to you guys. Work is pretty significant. That's a bit of a pillar. It comes with challenge and a whole lot of thought around what we do in our vocation and how do we fit that into serving God. Family has always been important to me. That's why I've got a couple of funny photos up there of all of us. And church has always been keen as well. That's another pillar for me. It's something that's really important. Or the kingdom of God, church, are kind of lots of similarities and connections there. But I actually grew up in Kalgoorlie, country Kalgoorlie, C of E, Christmas and Easter, or Church of England. Being a bit cheeky there, but I was an altar boy in the Church of England in Kalgoorlie. It was a fairly traditional Anglican church. Loved growing up in Kalgoorlie, country town in the 70s, do the math, that was a long, long time ago. But I think back then, if you know Kalgoorlie now, it's a bit of a checkered town. It was a checkered town back then, but I think it was probably a lot healthier in terms of me growing up in a family where my dad was involved in Rotary, my uncle was involved in Apex, there was Lions clubs, I was part of a youth group in my primary years. In fact, Dad, it's kind of interesting because Dad was always involved in youth, and I always seemed to be involved in youth in my workspace as well. if I wasn't a nurse, I'd probably rebadge as a phys ed teacher or outdoor ed teacher working with kids again. So anyway, probably won't get around to that, but I love growing up in Kalgoorlie, actually. Love the country town, love the country lifestyle, and I said back in the 70s and 80s it was probably quite a healthy place to be. But became a teenager, stopped going to church, as a lot of teens do, did my rebellious thing, and I had an eclectic mix of the music that I listened to. So it was Iron Maiden on one. Does anyone know Iron Maiden? Still around, I think. I've got AC/DC. And then Elton John. So I had this mix of these love songs and then these hardcore heavy metal as well. But did my rebellious thing in Kalgoorlie and was quite naughty for a number of years. Used to love playing footy and hockey, and I'm still playing hockey now, actually. It's one of the reasons I'm subbing back into a team now with Robbie, who's 28. As I say, he's played for Kingsway competition, and my son Isaac, stepson Isaac, he's actually just joined the adult competition as well. So I played yesterday, and that's why I'm limping. But love hockey, love kicking a can down the laneways of Kalgoorlie on the way home from the shops and school and so on. And when I first left, but I was really glad to get out of that town. It was I think like most young people, you actually grow out of the place that you grow up in. I think you grow up in country wherever or city wherever, it's like you want to change and want to move on. Probably like what Abby's doing now, going to explore the world. So I came to Perth. I was actually doing a computing course. Hated it. And if you think of the spectrum of working with computers, digital systems and computers, repairing, installing computer systems, to nursing, it's quite the opposite end of a spectrum of working with vocations. So I only did that for 6 months, dropped out of that, went back to Kalgoorlie. I'm going, I hate this town, I've got to get out of here. Cut a long story short, got into a nursing course at fairly short notice, and came to the city and loved it, actually. Really enjoyed nursing, working at Royal Perth Hospital, and seeing babies that were born as an 18-year-old and seeing people that were dying, it was pretty confronting life experience as an 18, 19-year-old, 20-year-old. And then towards the end of my nursing training, which led up to me actually making a decision to follow Jesus, was most of my friends were Christians. It was interesting. There was a girl in my nursing class, Franny Hogan, who she would say at the time was actually she was really struggling in her Christian walk, but actually I knew she had something in her life that I didn't have. I was living in Subiaco with another guy who was a Christian guy as well. Anyway, I ended up going to I heard on the radio about this Mind Power course which was towards the end of my nursing training in the country, in Mandra. And I thought, oh, this is it. This is kind of what I've been looking for. This makes sense. I'll go to this Mind Power course. So there was a Canadian guy there, John Keogh was his name, and let's just say it was bizarre. It was quite bizarre. There was nothing Christian whatsoever. But at the end of this 3-day Mind Power course, I just remember, and there was no preaching, there was no Bible, there was no sense of church or so on. But I knew I was getting convicted by God, and I just remember crying and just going, I'm sorry, God, I'm sorry, I'm sorry, I'm sorry. In this big hall where other people were having other weird and unusual experiences. So I went away from there, and it was kind of interesting because I was in a dorm with a couple of other, there was one person who was a Christian that went to another church, different church, and I couldn't understand, if you're a Christian, why are you doing this Mind Power course? That kind of didn't make sense to me, as a non-Christian. Anyhow, I had this thing that changed in my heart, something, I went away from it going, wow, this is incredible. And really, that was the time at which I decided to follow Christ. I left to go back to Kalgoorlie in the third year of my training, and the sun was coming up going over Great Eastern Highway, and it was as though I had never seen the sunrise before in my life. It was like, oh my gosh, something has radically changed in my heart and my spirit. So I went back to the Anglican church that I grew up in, and I'm back there with Mum and Dad, and I'm like reading hymns, you know, as you do, and I'm like, oh, I'm just crying, crying. And then we're driving home, it was around Easter, 26th of March, 86 is when I made the decision, but it's a couple of weeks later I was in Cal. We were driving home in my car. Mum and Dad were there, my brother was in the back seat, my sister. And I'm trying to, I've got to say something, I'm not sure what I'm going to say. What am I going to say? And I said, oh, this is a great day to celebrate, you know, coming up to Easter. And they're going, yeah, it is. And then Mum goes, what do you mean? I said, oh, because I've given my life to Jesus. I've decided to make, woo, more tears. My brother, who's 14, going, what are you crying about? You know. Anyhow, so that was the beginning of my journey. Journey went, obviously, earlier than that, but it was a big, significant part of my journey. I got involved after my nursing training, and I came to Perth and got involved in the Four Square Church, and I really sort of put some of my roots, and I really, servanthood was kind of something that was always really significant, one of those treasures, one of those things that just sort of stuck in my mind and my heart, like just serving, just doing. And I guess I'm a nurse, I'm in the helping professions, so, you know, we in the helping professions want to help, so, you know, teachers, nurses, social workers. But I know that was really a significant foundational truth that I learned in those days. I remember coming home from a youth camp years ago, and, you know, you have these lovely experiences. It's like men's camp, you know, you're incredible times where God moves and your heart's changed. And I remember coming back in the bus with all the other young people, and I'm just saying, God, why do we have these mountaintop experiences? I mean, they're fantastic, but why can't we have them all the time? Why can't we live, you know, with those revelations of God's greatness and, you know, and just live there? And I remember him saying, like, how many people live on mountains? We're not many. And I think it was just sort of being encouraging that God does these breakthrough things in our hearts and our lives, shows us these beautiful revelations of himself and reveals truths to us. And when we soar for a while, but actually people live in the valley. People live down in the communities. Mm. And so it's kind of nice to have these times, but actually most of the time we live down here on Earth, in South Perth or Heathridge or wherever, where people live. And that's where God calls us to be, the light, you know, where the people live. Does that make some sense?
Mm, it does.
All right. So, After getting married to Louise, who was my first wife, who was previously married, Robbie was actually, it was kind of interesting, older boy. He was already, so he's my stepson, I adopted him, but he was already John Robert Tyler, so we added Emmerich into his name. And I met his mum, Louise, when he was a baby. So we went through the adoption process. We got married. We moved to the country, got married, went through the adoption process, moved to the country, and then had three daughters, the three girls that you see there when they were really young. So the oldest of those is Laurie. She's now 25. That's her sitting on my knee. Do you recognise me? she's 25 now. Abby, who's the photographer, she's 23, and then Cherry, who's 20. The three girls. Love living in the country down in Mount Barker. We were involved in a small community down there and a church that sort of went from, that grew from living in someone's house, meeting in someone's house to meeting in a community hall to go into the rec centre because we're just growing and getting bigger and bigger. And it was just lovely. And the sort of, one of the lovely things about living in the country, I think, is that you can be a nobody and actually belong. So, you know, Mount Barker's 2,000 people, and you can be the local drug user that lives on the street corner there, but because you're in a small community, you kind of know, you get to know everybody in that town. It's really organic. So the church I was a part of down there called Plantagenet Family Church, PFC, sort of was great. It grew and grew, and we had nurses and we had farmers and
You weren't having grape juice for communion?
Real wine, yeah. Plantagenet. it's kind of funny because the pastors of the church down there, George and Hillary, they're actually my current wife, Esther's mum and dad, who are down there. So, and I knew Es not very well, but I knew her ex-husband at the time when I was about to leave Mount Barker after 7 years. The other thing I loved about Mount Barker and country life was just the getting involved in the community. So I was community nursing down there, involved in the high schools and the primary schools, but we actually got involved in a whole lot of social capital and community development programs as well. So I did a survey amongst all the kids down there, the young people, and of course in a country town, you know, what do you guys want? And a lot of it was around some of their social needs and their, you know, things they're interested in and they like. So they said, well, we want a cinema. And it's like, okay, a cinema, that's interesting. Or we want a rock wall. Yep, how do we do that in Mount Barker? Cut a long story short, we actually facilitated a cinema. So there was a local repertory club there that had this old Mount Barker stone building, like limestone. And there was the local police down there who had the blue light disco, so they had all the sound equipment. So again, we joined connection with those guys. We formed the local drug action group, which I convened, and then we got the police on board and the repertory team on board, and we got some funding and put up big black curtains and a great big screen, and we put on these community movie nights. So the first movie night, $3 a head, we had capacity 80 people. There was a queue that was like 30 metres long. We had to stop people from actually going there. So that was great. We ended up building a rock wall in the rec centre as well, which is kind of cool. It's still there now. I don't think it gets used anymore. But love that community development, social capital kind of stuff, the organic stuff of getting to know people that live in the community. Life was challenging in the country, though, and cut a very long story short, I ended up separating from my wife at the time, and that was one of the most, that was 2003, one of the most painful experiences of my life, that I was actually wanting to try and reconcile for 3 years. So, but one of the most profound times that I remember experiencing there, just before I left Mount Barker, so my wife at the time had left, I was looking after the kids for a term, and I had three of my best friends, really close friends, that came around. So one was a local GP, Vic, still GP down there now. One was George, my pastor, so Esther, my current wife Esther's dad, and Wazza's a pastor in Northern, actually, a preacher in Northern. And they sat with me to support me, and they didn't use any words at all. And I don't know how long we sat there, but it was one of the most profound experiences I've ever had in the Lord, and feeling supported and feeling loved by these guys. And they actually didn't say anything. So I kind of, you know, and that was a treasure. And I think sometimes we can do that. Like sometimes, it's good to encourage each other with words. There's other times it's just like you've just got to sit and be with and not use words, because that's still communicating, isn't it? It's still communicating love and care and nurture and so on. So At the time, I knew that the impact of broken covenant on my kids was going to be huge. And I remember just weeping, because I knew that they were going to have to carry the weight on some level around mum and dad separating. And we can't, it's like gravity, we can't. You know, that's the impacts of broken covenant, isn't it? It's like, it's incredibly, I mean, and God is there to mend that up and to heal that. And at the same time, there's implications of brokenness that happens because decisions are made and choices are made, and it's really, really difficult. So, ended up moving back to the city, and I was really hoping for reconciliation over probably 3 years. And I remember I haven't had many words of knowledge or prophetic words sort of spoken into my life, but I do remember one of my close friends saying, after about 3 years, this is the end of your husbanding. You can actually let go now. It's kind of, and it kind of made sense. I mean, I think what had happened, I think that I think it had already, I think that had already happened historically, that broken covenant. But I was trying to be hopeful and wanting that, you know, hoping that that reconciliation would take place. So I was a single parent for 12... By the way, we're coming back to the Bible and good news, so don't worry. and the hope that all of that brings. So I was a single parent for 12 years, living in Greenwood. I endeavoured to focus on my kids at the time, who were growing up, going through their teenage years. And poor Laurie, who's my oldest, I'm going to tell a story about her, not in detail, but poor love, as Esther would say, went through a horrible time in her teen years, 13 and 14. She ended up at the Elizabeth House at the time, Elizabeth Foundation, I think it was then. I think that probably saved her life from 10 years ago. But that was really hard for her. She was there for about 6 months and then came out, and we tried to put her back into a Govey school, which didn't go well, and then she went into the workspace, which was really good. So I'm really grateful, though, that even though it's been really hard for those years, that I still have a close relationship with my kids. Yeah, really, really grateful. Good relationship with them. I caught up with Robbie just recently, because when he was in year 12, that was 10 years ago, just over 10 years ago, he was doing his ATAR, and he wasn't studying, he was bombing out. And we were playing hockey together at the time, and I laid down a boundary and said, because he wasn't studying, and I said, well, you're not going to go to hockey. He pushed the envelope and said, well, I am going to go to hockey, and we went to the hockey game, and I said to the umpire, I want you to take his name off the card. He's not to play hockey, and it was a dad trying to put in a really firm boundary around, actually, your studies are important, and you're not going to do this.
Kudos to you.
Yeah, it was really tough thing to do, and I caught up with him a couple of weeks ago and actually said to him, because I just felt a couple of months ago the Lord just prompt and go, not that I felt I'd done the wrong thing, I think it was actually a strong and hard thing to do, but I wanted to say to him, look, if there's anything left there, if there was some residual, you know, what I did from 10 years ago, I'm just laying it out there, I probably could have done that differently and handled that differently. And he said, oh, no, that's okay, Dad, I probably could have done that differently as well. It was kind of a nice conversation that we had. So during those years, God was always present. He was always encouraging. And I just hung in there. I mean, what options do you have? you either choose to follow God or you don't. And I know plenty of friends from days gone by of church life who actually have chosen not to follow God. And so I've doggedly tried to hang in there, and at times, most of the times, actually haven't done that very well. In fact, most of the times I feel like that dead carcass. You know, the roadkill going down to Albany, you see that's like, really, but I think that's probably more normal than not normal. Yes, we have these mountaintop experiences that are great, but other times we just feel like crap a lot of the time. But that doesn't discount the fact that God is still God. He still loves, he still cares for us, he still encourages us along every day of our lives. There's a lovely psalm I'm going to read out here, Psalm 34, 17 and 18. Says, the Lord hears his people when they call to him for help. He rescues them from all their troubles. The Lord is close to the brokenhearted. He rescues those who are crushed in spirit. And crushed in spirit, the picture there is like a squashed fly. Sometimes I feel like a squashed fly. But God is still God, and he still rescues us. He still gives us hope. He still is close to the brokenhearted. We sing these songs, don't we? He never stops working. He's a waymaker. He's a miracle worker. He doesn't sleep. He muses over us. He looks at us and just loves on us all the time. His kingdom can't be stopped. And he keeps planting. He keeps pruning. That's painful sometimes. He keeps watering. He keeps giving increase. He keeps improving the quality, cultivating. And if we respond to that love and to the treasures, the things that he places in our hearts, then that grows and gets bigger and bigger. My stepson, Isaac, he's nearly 15. You know, every few months I've noticed teenagers, they come up with these new terms. You know, it used to be dabbing and flossing. If you dab and floss now, that's very uncool. But the latest thing is bet. It has the word bet, B-E-T, and it's, you can say it to almost anything. I think it means yes or okay or, you know, yeah, bet, okay. I think it's like you bet or I bet, I'll bet, sure. But he had this other saying flex. You know, flex, I think it's like flex, just flex. And I think of church life, like I think we've just got to flex. It doesn't really matter how we flex, just flex. So setting up chairs or doing worship or cooking or leading kids or speaking or, you know, doesn't it matter? Just flex, just flex. And once you start getting the wind in your sails, then you can basically steer wherever you want to go. Or God can take us or take you wherever you want to go. Just flex. All right. How are we going for time? I've no clue.
All good.
Okay.
All good.
Oh, is there any other pictures up there that I might maybe... there's Isaac and Ellie. There you go. So, teenagers. Ellie on the left, she's 12. And Isaac, nearly 15. Ellie, nearly 13. Two teenagers. Which means, yes, I got remarried. So there you go. There was a photo of all of us, actually, at our wedding, but some reason I didn't send it through or omitted to do that. So, I wanted to talk a little bit about faces and Facebook and masks and a couple of other things about that as well in terms of treasure and connecting and communicating. It says, I've got another scripture here in John 13. Says John 13:34-38. Yeah, where is it? Okay, here we go. Oh yeah. So now I'm giving you a new commandment. Love each other just as I love you. You should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. Simon Peter said, Lord, where are you going? And Jesus replied, you can't go with me now, but you will follow me later. But why can't I go, Lord? He answered, I'm ready to die for you. Jesus answered, die for me? No, before the rooster crows tomorrow morning, you will deny me three times that you ever knew me. But just going back to 34, there's a new commandment that I'm giving you. Love each other, just as I have loved you. You should love each other. Your love for one another will prove to the world that you are my disciples. I don't think it's supposed to be rocket science. I think following the Lord, it's deep. Like E equals MC squared. That's a real simple equation. Simple as, but it's actually profoundly deep and powerful. And I get from this, it's like, if we really love each other, like if we really love it, like if I get to know your names, I think, like I just need to do that. And I was talking to Tonya before, like I probably need to connect in with some of the food that, you know, some of the gatherings that happen here outside of Sunday. But if we really love each other, it's that power and that quality of relationship that other people see and go, wow, what is that? Like that's how profound and significant that can be. It's what impressed me when I was 21 and I had friends that were Jesus followers at the time going, you've got something that I don't have. So it's not rocket science. It can be done. It can be done. And even in the middle of messy relationships, life can happen. This picture of Peter, like I watched The Passion of the Christ, you know, I've done it the last few years around Easter. I've watched it with Isaac this year. And it's so moving. You guys have seen it. I guess it's an old movie, but it's so powerful. And I just cry every time that point at which Peter denies Jesus, you know, and it's just like, and Jesus catches his eye, and then Peter just, he's got to get out of there. And Peter loves Jesus, but he denies him. It's like, I do that, we do that. Like, not overtly, Jesus, I'm not going to follow you, but in just the way we live, it's like, life can be hard. And Jesus says it's actually okay. Because Peter still loved Jesus, even though he denied him. And even more so, Jesus still loved Peter. Like, he kind of called him on it. You're going to deny me three times, but it's okay. So, he still pursues us in our sinful rebellion. We sing these beautiful songs. Why does he leave the 99? My gosh. Because there's one that actually wanders off. What about the 90? What about us? You're fine. You've got each other. The one that's gone off, that's the one we need to care about. And go and bring him back. It's almost like the disconnect that actually happens between Peter and Jesus. That actually proves Christ's love for him. The fact that we are fallen and we're sinners, that's the vehicle by which God brings reconciliation to the world. Does that make sense? So, have I got time to do this video?
Sure.
Is it? Yeah. Has anyone heard of the still face experiment? Yeah, a couple of people. So I've got this on video, and it's only there for a couple of minutes, and maybe we could watch this, and I can talk to that as well.
Babies this young are extremely responsive to emotion and reactivity and the social interaction that they get from the world around them. This is something that we started studying 34 years ago, when people didn't think that infants could engage in social interaction. And the still faith experiment with them did was she sits down and she's playing with her baby who's about a year of age. And she gives a greeting to the baby, baby gives a greeting back to her. The baby starts pointing at different places in the world, and the mother's trying to engage her and play with her. They're working to coordinate their emotions and their intentions, what they want to do in the world. And that's really what the baby is used to. Then we ask the mother to not respond to the baby. The baby very quickly picks up on this, and then she uses all of her abilities to try and get the mother back. She smiles at the mother. She points because she's used to the mother looking where she points. The baby puts both hands up in front of her and says, "What's happening here?" She makes that screechy sound at the mother, like, "Come on, why aren't we doing this?" Even in this 2 minutes when they don't get the normal reaction, they react with negative emotions, they turn away, they feel the stress of it, they actually may lose control of their posture because of the stress that they're experiencing. It's a little like the good, the bad, and the ugly. The good is that normal stuff that goes on, that we do with our kids. The bad is when something bad happened, but the infant can overcome it. After all, when you stop the still face, the mother and the baby start to play. The ugly is when you don't give the child any chance to get back to the good. There's no reparation, and they're stuck in that really ugly situation.
So this was an experiment that they did back in the 1970s, and Ed Tronick, he's the guy that oversaw it, he must be in his 80s now, they thought back then that actually infants didn't have much capacity to engage with the world around them, but it was more up to the caregivers, usually mums, to provide everything for the infant, but they've actually realised that actually comes from the infant as well. So it's inherently in humans to reach out and to connect with other humans. Well, we do an amazing job at putting of having disconnects with and being still-faced, I think, around each other, I think, sometimes. I wonder about masks as well. You know, we've been through this period of 2 years where worldwide we've been wearing these masks, and I guarantee you there's going to be research around now with little kiddos. You know, I can see mum and dads at work, we still wear masks, even though we're working with a well population in health in the community, we still wear masks, so we joke about each other's eyebrows when we do things. It's Chelsea, I can see your eyebrows, and it's, you know, Rob, I can see you. But we miss so much from, you know, when we're not present. But the beautiful opportunity there and message of that is that you reconnect and you can reconcile and connect once again. So Ed's most recent book is called The Power of Discord, which is based on his research from the 70s. And basically the essence of the book, or one of the things that I kind of took from that, is the power of discord, is that the discord actually is the vehicle by which reconciliation or reconnection or getting back on track or growth actually occurs. Does that make sense? Mm. And I'm learning this. So Facebook can be, you know, Facebook is Facebook. Don't worry about that. But 8 years ago, I was on Facebook. I reconnected with Esther, who I knew from back in the country. Cut a long story short, we got married 7.5 years ago, which has been a joyful adventure. But we've been separated for 4 months now, nearly 4 months. And it's been a healing separation. Some of you guys know that. And we're living back together, which is good. But some of the things that I've learned and am learning is around this, that discord, that very process there, is again the gold or the treasure or the opportunity to bring reconnection again and reconciliation and healing. So, I'm feeling buoyed up by that and hopeful about that. I recently, last year, also had a milestone birthday in the other half of the sixth decade of my life. I'm that old. And I think it sort of coincided with turning 55, that's what I'm saying, last year. So, and I think it coincided with my older girls leaving home. Like, it was kind of it was an emotional period. Like, felt really quite discouraged, I think was probably the word. And maybe there was some depression there as well. But discouragement was kind of the thing that I was feeling. Number one, because it's like, you're 55, Rob, what have you achieved? And I'm going, you know, you maybe get to the age, it's like, what is life all about? What is... And I thought by the time I would get to my age, I would have achieved more. Does that make sense? You know, you kind of have these ideas of what life is about, and you set goals, and you'll go and achieve those. And now I'm kind of this age, like, what have I achieved? Which is a good question to ask, but it's not good if it's like you've achieved nothing. Now, the whispers that I heard at the time, because there's some really good questions, is like, well, what is life all about, actually? What do I feel about my future and what have I decided? And when I answered that at the time, probably 18 months ago, it was like, time's running out. I've been left behind. And this sense of being disqualified. Now, we know that's not from God, right? That's pretty clear. And it was around that time that I connected with you guys, and it's been a loving, embracing journey since then, which has been so healing. It's been lovely. So, all right, I need to wrap up. Is that okay? Shortly. So, what do you guys feel about your future? What's the treasure that Jesus has placed within you guys and me, all of us? What is he calling us to, and how does he want to transform us into being followers of him and the work that he wants us to do? And is Jesus the treasure? And if so, what's the treasure that he's placed in your heart what small mustard seeds has he placed within you? I kind of love that thing about mustard seed faith. You know, they're quite small, aren't they? But they bring the aroma. They bring aroma to food. And sometimes, you know, it's like faith. It's like, oh, is that a bit of dandruff? No, that's your mustard seed faith. Like, oh, Gareth, there's, you know, I think we see mustard seeds and we see the yeast. And we, you know, I think we just, but sometimes we don't see it or we don't pay attention to it. What makes you come alive, John Eldridge said. What do you value? Or are we treasure hunters, discovering all that God has and is? The inventors, the teachers, the scientists, looking for the kingdom of God and the discoveries that he wants us to discover. As a nurse, as a teacher, as a social worker, as an engineer, are we his hands and his feet to discover treasure in others? The exchange rate is good, guys. So put yourself out there. Put it. Go to the exchange space. And that's all I've got to say, really. So hopefully you're encouraged, and thank you for your thank you for your love and care. And
thank you, Rob.